I'm Nicolas Cage, and I approve this message.
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome to our top stories this hour. It is a very busy news afternoon. They are in recess right now at the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, and this has proven to be one of the most fascinating legal trials in a long, long, long time. We'll have a complete recap of that. Also, the outrage of who Jay Inslee selected as new Secretary of State. Get ready. Democrats have total control, including over our elections now. And we've already seen in Washington in 2004, Democrats blatantly stealing a gubernatorial election. And I said that a couple of hours ago. And I got some angry text messages. You say they stole an election. You've hit a new low. Prove me wrong. I covered that for weeks and weeks. I spent hours every day on air and off air covering that story. And there is zero doubt in my mind that that gubernatorial election in 2004 was blatantly stolen by the Democrats. Dino Rossi won the first one, the election night count. He won the first recount. And then they found Chris Gregoire ballots at King County Elections. Lo and behold. And the election was stolen. And with that as our history in our state, now that Jay Inslee has picked a Democrat to oversee elections, and there is zero counterbalance to that now. Not one Republican in statewide office, not just in Washington, Washington, Oregon, California. Get ready for what Jay Inslee and his party is planning to do in the 3 years ahead. And even though I personally like Kim Wyman very much, shame on her for running for Secretary of State if she was planning to bail on the job if she got a better offer. I think that's, I'm very, very disappointed with somebody that I personally have great affection for, Kim Wyman. I'll get to all of those things, but let's begin with the trial of the year. Our top story.
The Big Lead, top story.
You know the story about Kyle Rittenhouse, 17-year-old kid, took an AR-15, went up to Kenosha, Wisconsin, where his dad lives. He lived several miles away. But he saw that there was rioting there after a police shooting, police-involved shooting. He went up, he said, to, first of all, I mean, we know that the day of the incident for which he's on trial, he was at a local high school in Kenosha cleaning graffiti off walls. The 17-year-old kid said he wanted to go up there and help be part of the solution. So he was up cleaning graffiti, and then he went to, he said, protect businesses that were being burned down. And dozens of Kenosha businesses were being burned to the ground that night. So Kyle Rittenhouse, the video is clear as can be. I don't even know why he's on trial for murder, except that social media demanded it. And it seems like, you know, this isn't even America anymore. When people are put on trial, not because of the law, but because of the mob. But that's the way it is. So here's what we know. Kyle Rittenhouse, he was, and there's video to back every one of these things up. He was, he had his AR-15, which just that by itself has a lot of people upset, but he was there defending businesses, he said. And the first shooting involved a convicted child molester who was running, and in testimony, another person said, "I'm going to bleeping kill you," to Kyle Rittenhouse and to the person who was on the stand. So this person had made a death threat against Kyle Rittenhouse. He runs right at Kyle Rittenhouse. He tries to grab the barrel of his AR-15, and that's when Kyle Rittenhouse fired and killed this convicted child molester who had been trying to grab his gun and had threatened to kill him. Seems like self-defense. Then Kyle Rittenhouse tried to run away from a mob, and that's when a guy with a skateboard who is a convicted domestic abuser, ran in and cracked Kyle Rittenhouse over the head with his skateboard. And Kyle Rittenhouse, while sitting on the ground after having fallen, and after this guy had, Yes, a skateboard can be a deadly weapon if it's swung at somebody's head. The metal trucks, you know, were being swung at this kid. And he turned, fired, and killed that guy. And the third guy ran up. And that guy had a Glock. By the way, the third guy, he was not licensed to carry a gun. He had lost, because of a previous conviction, he had lost his legal right to carry a gun. But he had a Glock. He had his hands up, the third guy. And Kyle Rittenhouse didn't fire. But then the guy lowered his hands, Glock in hand, pointed the Glock right at Kyle Rittenhouse. And that's when Rittenhouse fired and killed that guy. That guy's name is Gage. He didn't kill Gage Grootskruitz. He shot him in the bicep, and as Grootskruitz said, he vaporized his bicep. But, and this was, you know, I said yesterday, this is like a Few Good Men moment. When Grootskruitz admitted, yeah, the kid didn't shoot me until I had a loaded, chambered gun in my hand leveled at him.
You'd agree your firearm is pointed at Mr. Rittenhouse, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And once your firearm is pointed at Mr. Rittenhouse, that's when he fires his gun. Yes?
No.
Sir, look, I don't want to... Does this look like right now your arm is being shot?
That looks like my bicep being vaporized, yes.
Okay. And it's being vaporized as you're pointing your gun directly at him. Yes?
Yes.
Okay, so... When you were standing 3 to 5 feet from him with your arms up in the air, he never fired, right?
Correct.
It wasn't until you pointed your gun at him, advanced on him, with your gun, now your hands down, pointed at him, that he fired, right?
Correct.
Okay, I don't know why the defense couldn't just say, turn to the judge and say, hey, give us a directed verdict. Trial's over. He shot this guy because he had a gun pointed at him. And the other two, it's been amply displayed that Rittenhouse had a defense. I don't know why this is a racial case, by the way. People seem to be divided on political and racial lines. Rittenhouse is white, and the three people he shot are all white. But for some reason, we got to see everything through a race prism these days. So Rittenhouse... should just end the trial right now. But it went on to today. I have a lot of new audio for you. They talked about Marcy's Law. The prosecutors could have checked the phone of that Gage Grootskruitz to see what he had texted people, to see, you know, where he had been, the geolocation, but they chose not to, and nobody can figure out why. Except the prosecutors were afraid that just trying to figure out exactly what happened would hurt their case.
Have you ever relied on Marcy's Law not to execute a search warrant since it's gone into effect?
We've had conversations in the aftermath, but I don't recall not searching one solely on that basis.
So this is, if I'm fair, it is the only one that you recall using Marcy's Law as the basis for not doing it?
Correct.
And it's the only one that you recall ever getting a direction from a prosecutor handling the case not to do it.
Pursuant to Marcy's Law, yes.
Okay, so the prosecutors didn't even pursue the truth because social media had already convicted this kid. Not just social media, everybody had. Joe Biden put out a campaign ad calling Kyle Rittenhouse a white supremacist.
Are you willing tonight to condemn white supremacists and militia groups and to say that they need to stand down and not add to the violence in a number of these cities, as we saw in Kenosha?
And they're showing pictures of Kyle Rittenhouse as they're talking about white supremacists. Kyle Rittenhouse's family is suing Joe Biden for libel for that campaign ad. And so they... You know, we find out that the prosecutors weren't seeking the truth. Tucker Carlson, by the way, had a great recap of all of this on his show last night. And he had on somebody from the Daily Caller who talked about the child molester who was shot and killed by Rittenhouse.
This is Richie McGinnis of the Daily Caller. McGinnis was reporting from Kenosha that night. He appeared live on the show, in fact. He was just inches away when Rittenhouse shot a convicted child molester called Joseph Rosenbaum. Now, why was a convicted child molester at a riot on behalf of BLM? That's a whole nother story. A lot of people like that there that night, it turns out. But the prosecutor hoped to portray the shooting of this child molester, Rosenbaum, as an act of senseless violence committed by a psychopath, Kyle Rittenhouse. Here's what Richard McGinnis said he saw.
I mean, you have no idea what Mr. Rosenbaum was ever thinking at any point in his life. You have never been inside his head. You never met him before. You don't know.
I've never exchanged words with him, if that's what your question is.
So your interpretation of what he was trying to do or what he was intending to do or anything along those lines is complete guesswork, isn't it?
Well, he said, "F*** you," and then he reached for the weapon.
This is the most incompetent prosecutor I've ever seen in my life. Another witness that the prosecutor called said, no, the child molester who got shot and killed, he threatened Kyle Rittenhouse.
Then yet another prosecution witness, this one called Ryan Balch, testified that Joseph Rosenbaum said out loud that he intended to kill Kyle Rittenhouse.
I stepped in and told everybody, chill out, calm down, stop doing that. I turned and had an exchange with one of the protesters, and I kind of explained to that protester, hey, you know, I get it, get what you're trying to do, but, like, not this. And when I turned around, Rosenbaum was right there in front of my face, yelling and screaming, and I would say, dude, back up, just chill, I don't know what your problem is. And he goes, you know what, if I catch any of you guys alone tonight, I'm going to kill you.
And he said that to you?
Correct.
Did he say that to the defendant as well?
The defendant was there, so yes.
That's a prosecution witness saying that the child molester who got killed, Rosenbaum, said, I'm going to bleep and kill you, and then grabbed for Rittenhouse's gun. In fact, his hand was on the barrel of the gun, according to testimony, because the powder on his hand made it clear his hand was on the barrel of the gun. He was grabbing the gun away after saying, I'm going to kill you. Of course, that's self-defense. Then the second guy who was killed was this domestic violence guy who had a skateboard and was swinging it at Kyle Rittenhouse's head.
One point, another prosecution witness testified that Anthony Huber, who was, you won't be surprised to learn at this point, a convicted domestic abuser, was bashing Kyle Rittenhouse in the head with a skateboard when he was shot. So once again, we have the textbook definition of self-defense.
This is good coverage that they had last night, and I have some new audio for you today, too. But let's go back a year, because a year ago, in the media, and this is why, you know, people say, and some people get uncomfortable that I'm always criticizing the media. You're part of the media. Yeah, but I tell the truth. I want you to hear CNN, MSNBC, and what they were saying a year ago with zero basis in fact. They had already convicted this kid.
But you'd never know any of this from watching the coverage of the trial. NBC News, for example, just ran this thoroughly dishonest headline, quote, shooting victim at Rittenhouse trial said he thought he was going to die. What the article didn't mention, it seems kind of relevant, the shooting victim was pointed a loaded gun at the boy who shot him. So they're liars. You knew that. In this case, they have to lie. If they didn't, they'd be forced to admit that they were wrong from the very beginning. In case you've forgotten, this is what they were telling you all last year about Kyle Rittenhouse.
Rittenhouse is basically what you would have had in a school shooter. He's a 17-year-old kid. He shouldn't have had a gun. He crossed state lines to supposedly protect property. No, he was going out to shoot people.
You see, the 17-year-old who was radicalized by Trumpism took his AR-15 to Kenosha and became a killer.
A 17-year-old kid from out of state, a boy from out of state, drives up to the state with an AR-15 around his neck, shoots and kills a couple of people, shooting wildly, running around, acting like rent-a-cop.
And it's not good that a 17-year-old vigilante, arguably a domestic terrorist, picked up a rifle, drove to a different state to shoot people.
So that was CNN and MSNBC. They'd convicted the kid a year ago. If you watch the trial, everything they said is a lie. Everything. But when they presuppose an outcome for political reasons, the media, meaning CNN, MSNBC, they don't care if they lie. Their viewers care because their ratings are in the toilet. But, okay, let's move on to today. The prosecutor tried to ask some questions, and the judge just eviscerated. I mean, I've never seen such an incompetent prosecutor in my entire life.
We've had three state motions in the room. There was one in which we asked the court to introduce evidence that the defendant was at Pudgy's Bar with Proud Boys, and you were clear, that is not coming in. There was...
You know, don't get into other subjects. Get it. Come on, what you're telling me, you're an experienced trial attorney, and you're telling me that when the judge says, I'm excluding this, you just to take it upon yourself to put it in because you think that you've found a way around it?
Do you know how unusual? This is the judge yelling at the prosecutor for being so far out of bounds with what he was doing and saying.
Come on.
If I may finish, Your Honor, I was about to say, your ruling on our three motions and other ask motions was there were some gradations there. That you were clear that some things were absolutely out, and then you left the door open on other things. So I saw that distinction, and I thought to myself, clearly I know this is out, but you left the door open on other things. So I didn't interpret your ruling as this is absolutely never coming in. And I have practiced before you, Your Honor. I have filed other motions before you. Your practice oftentimes is to reserve ruling on those until you see the evidence. And I think you even said something to that effect at our motion.
I undoubtedly did.
So I thought this is my good faith explanation to you, and if you want to yell at me, you can. My good faith feeling this morning after watching that testimony was you had left the door open a little bit, now we had something new, and I was going to probe it.
I don't believe you. There better not be another incident. I'll take the motion under advisement. And you can respond. When you say that you were acting in good faith, I don't believe that, okay? Let's proceed. Everybody in good faith. All right. Would you come up, please, Mr. Rittenhouse?
I do have...
What do you think the jury's thinking as they hear the judge just ripping the prosecutor like that? And the jury, the only thing that the prosecution can rest its head on now is a friend of George Floyd posted a video yesterday and suggested if the jury doesn't come back with a guilty verdict, that they may go and harm the jurors at their homes.
I ain't even going to name the people that I know that's up in the Kenosha trial. But there's cameras in there. Yep. It's definitely cameras up in there, and there's definitely right. People taking pictures of the juries and everything like that. We know what's going on. So we need the same results, man. We need the same results. Justice for Dante Wright. Justice for Austin.
So that's a George Floyd friend that says Kenosha had nothing to do with George Floyd. And he is suggesting that the jurors will be in grave danger if they don't come back with a guilty verdict, even though the evidence is pretty clear that the kid's not guilty. And in fact, the judge this morning talked about how somebody was video recording the jury as they were going from their hotel onto a bus, presumably so they could be doxxed.
It was reported to me that by Lieutenant Zerline that this morning... Lieutenant Zerline, that this morning at the pickup, there was someone there and was video recording the jury.
Okay, so they're threatening the jurors, essentially. And then Kyle Rittenhouse, 17-year-old kid, he knows he's innocent. In fact, the world after this trial knows he's innocent. And I don't blame him for breaking down on the stand. I'm going to play you that audio. Let me take a quick time out. I'm going to play you the audio of that. And then I have a lot of other news to get to locally. It's a very busy afternoon, and we have you covered both locally and nationally as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. Hello! So let me wrap up this Kyle Rittenhouse trial from today before I move on to some local stuff. But I think it's clear to everybody that Kyle Rittenhouse, the 17-year-old kid they have on trial for murder, is innocent of that. Now, he was a 17-year-old in possession of a gun. He took it across state lines. He might face some minor charges for that. But I can't believe this trial's going on. And Kyle Rittenhouse, earlier today, he really broke down on the stand.
Over my shoulder, and Mr. Rosenbaum was now running from my right side. And I was cornered from in front of me with Mr. Zeminski. And there were... there were three people right there.
Take a deep breath, Kyle.
Just relax for a minute, sir.
It was a bit of a gamble for the defense to put Kyle Rittenhouse on the stand, but I think he came across very sympathetic. He came across very articulate, and the defense attorney, or the prosecution, rather, came across as a buffoon. And I want to thank all our listeners who are texting me. I played for you in the last segment audio of the judge just ripping the prosecutor. The jury was not in the courtroom. I just confirmed what a listener or several listeners had told me. The jury was not in the courtroom for the judge ripping the prosecutor. So that would not skew the jury's view of all of that. So that's the very latest. Everybody with legal knowledge who's been watching this case, and a lot of people are following every minute of it, everyone would be shocked if Kyle Rittenhouse was found guilty of murder. This looks like classic self-defense. All right, I want to get some local news. As you heard in Aaron's newscast, Jay Inslee has replaced Secretary of State Kim Wyman, who has left for a job in the Biden administration. Kim Wyman, a bit of a friend of mine. I like her. I'm very, very disappointed for her. I have no idea why she ran for re-election as Secretary of State if she was going to just jump ship and go to the Biden administration. I think that's horrible. Kim Wyman was the only Republican, not just in Washington, she was the only Republican on the West Coast who had been elected to a statewide office, Washington, Oregon, California, as Secretary of State. So Jay Inslee, a couple of hours ago, he announced that Steve Hobbs is his new Secretary, is your new Secretary of State. I'm shocked that Jay Inslee didn't go with his initial instinct for Secretary of State.
As president, as I had to think about getting a Secretary of State who has asked us to embrace more unity across the world and more love rather than hate, so my first act will be to ask Megan Rapinoe to be my Secretary of State.
How inclusive, Jay. So he was going to make Megan Rapinoe Secretary of State of the United States. But then he doesn't even have the guts to do that for just his little dinky state of Washington. Steve Hobbs, Democratic senator since 2005, is the new Secretary of State. I don't know. I mean, I've had Steve Hobbs on the show a few times, and he seems okay. I respect and honor his military service. He's a military veteran. He served in Iraq and Kosovo. But he's been a state senator for 16 years. And nothing corrupts a person's soul like being in politics. And being in politics for 16 years, it's the quote I toss out all the time from Henry Kissinger. Power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. Now that Democrats have complete control, given that they blatantly and undeniably stole a gubernatorial election in 2004, I can't stand the idea of having no checks and balances in our state with a Democrat in charge of our elections now. And we'll reach out to Steve Hobbs. I'll try to get him on. But here's what I know. No matter what word Steve Hobbs and Jay Inslee says, the Democrats now see unlimited power. And Steve Hobbs on a couple of environmental issues and trying to tax the people is even further out than Jay Inslee. So I think this is going to be horrible for the taxpayers. And I think that Jay Inslee should have replaced a Republican. The voters have consistently elected a Republican as Secretary of State because voters like to have a little checks and balances to otherwise unlimited runaway drunken power by Democrats in our state. Now we have a Democrat in charge of our state elections, and the Democrats have a clear, provable, undeniable history of stealing an election. And I'm tired of all these text messages that I'm getting. Oh, can you say that it's undeniable that they stole 2004? You have no idea what you're talking about if you're trying to challenge me on that. I covered that story for weeks. I spent hours on air and I spent hours off air every day for weeks and weeks and weeks covering the Democrats stealing the 2004 gubernatorial election. Dino Rossi won the vote count on election night. Dino Rossi won the first recount, and then they found ballots at King County elections, and they were all for Chris Gregoire. And she suddenly, oh, look, she wins. It was criminal. And what was the name of the guy? Dean Logan was in charge of King County elections. And then he went down to Los Angeles, and he got in all sorts of legal trouble for what he did with elections down there. I think Dean Logan should have gone to prison for stealing a gubernatorial election. And I know that's an awfully libelous thing to say, but you're protected from libel if the truth is your defense. And I would love if he wanted to come after me for that, because I'll put on not only all the evidence from what happened in 2004, but I'll put on all the evidence from what he did down in Los Angeles, as they had the most shady election since 2004 in the United States under the watch of the former King County elections guy in L.A. But we as voters are supposed to trust now that the Democratic Party, and this is not a condemnation of Steve Hobbs. Like I said, I respect his military service. But you can't be in the Senate for 16 years and have your soul intact. And I'm sorry, I've been watching politics for a long, long time. And I'll say the same of career Republican politicians. Problem is, we don't have any Republicans in charge. Because everybody says, oh, you never say that about Republicans. It's because we don't have any Republicans in our state who are in charge of things. They're the minority in everything. But in our state, there's absolutely no question about what unlimited power does. So, yes, I think the Democrats are going to try to abuse this unlimited, unchecked power. I got a lot more to do as I cruise through the afternoon. Coming up next, we'll count down our favorite sound bites of the day. A great batch of awesome audio. That is still ahead as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. Down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. Hey, before I get to our awesome audio, I had an exclusive interview a couple of hours ago with Jesse Herrera. He's a King County Sheriff's deputy. He's part of the King County Sheriff's Honor Guard. And he was distraught because one of his colleagues, one of his brothers, died from COVID-19. And with that, the honor guard, they expected they were going to be able to do the things they do, and that's escort the body from the funeral home or from the hospital to the funeral home. They do a thing called casket watch at the funeral home where they just stand sentry while the family comes by and pays their or any other friends. And it's really a beautiful, beautiful tribute. But Sheriff Mitzi Joe Hanknick has refused to rule this COVID death a line of duty death. Now, here's what's incredible about all of this. There are about 500 officers in the country who have died from COVID over the last couple of years, and every single one of them, every single one, was ruled a line of duty death, except for this one. And so why would Mitzi Joe Hanknick not make this a line of duty death? And first of all, this deputy was not vaccinated, which a lot of people have asked. But the vaccine mandate wasn't even in place. He contracted it in September. There wasn't even a vaccine mandate until October. And frankly, all the listeners who are saying, nah, he deserved it because he wasn't vaccinated, shame on you. Shame on you. And yet some people are saying that. And maybe that's one reason Mitzi Johanken just wants to make an example of him for dying unvaccinated. But yeah, according to the Washington Post, about 500 cops have died from COVID. And every one of them has been treated as line of duty death, except for this one. Were you talking to me, Nicole?
Yes. Yeah, sorry, really quick. I just wanted to also say that that would have streamlined. That would have made it automatic for the honor duty. But regardless, she could give honor duty to anybody. I've heard from another sheriff who said that you can, if anyone requests it, you can give it to them. It's, you know, retired officers that die in their 80s. If their family wants it, the sheriff can approve it. So you don't have to be line of duty death. That doesn't have to be decided at that point. She could have just done it. So why she picked this battle, it blows my mind.
Well, there's something seriously wrong. And I have no problem saying that. And I've heard from so many people who work for the King County Sheriff's Office who have told me the exact same thing. There's something seriously wrong with Mitzi Johanken. Mentally, emotionally, I've told you from the very beginning that she's one of only two public officials that I have declared to be incompetent at their job. The former Seattle DOT director, Scott Gubley, was the other one. I don't play that card routinely, but Mitzi Johanken is incompetent, and there's something mentally quite wrong with her. So I talked with Jesse Herrera, who was told that the honor guard wasn't authorized. So he and his fellow honor guard members, they still put on their uniform, and on their own free time, they went and escorted the body, which apparently made Mitzi Johanken just crazy. And you had to stand down. Why?
We were not told why no honor guard was authorized. We were just told it is not authorized, and that was it. There's a process that happens once a passing of a law enforcement officer where honor guard steps in. We do things for the family. We're there to honor our fallen brother and sister. And that didn't happen.
And Jesse was a training officer for Deputy Ryan Gallimore, who has a wife and four children. And by the way, if it's a line of duty death, there are college benefits for the four kids, which Mitzi Johanken. And what is she trying to save the taxpayers' money? Mitzi Johanken, who has issued a travel ban for the entire King County Sheriff's Office, but in September went to a conference in Boston on the taxpayer dime when nobody under her command is allowed to travel, and now she cares about the taxpayers? No, there's something seriously wrong with Mitzi Johanken. And so Jesse was told that they were going to be placed under investigation because on their own time, they honored their fallen brother, Ryan Gallimore. But on your own time, you chose to stand sentry, do the casket watch, escort the body. What happened to you?
A couple days after that, we learned that the sheriff was not happy with that and that we were going to be investigated.
And I was a little nervous that Jesse was even talking to me because Mitzi Johanken has proven to be an unbelievably spiteful, vengeful person. I don't want to get you in a jackpot with your sheriff.
Dory, I'm a firm believer, and I've been doing this for over 20 years now. I came on this job to do the right thing, to serve my community and those that I look up to and those that are my peers. There's a lot of people in this department that will not come forward on the record because they feel like they're walking on eggshells. I'm doing what is right, and if the sheriff disciplines me, she's disciplining for what I'm doing is right.
Okay, and if she does, I will have your back, and so will my listeners. I guarantee you that, Jesse. And God bless the family and the memory of Ryan Gallimore, who was laid to rest this morning in a story that's gotten almost no attention because it was not ruled a line of duty death by Mitzi Johanken. Shameful. Absolutely shameful. I got to get out of here. Tom and Curley Show is coming up next. You can hear that entire interview if you check out our podcast from the noon hour. And we have all of our stories at MyNorthwest.com. We've really stepped things up there. I'll see you tomorrow. High noon.
Oh, and in case I don't see you, Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.